our announcements, first of all, on 3 days in the month of September, we will have teacher and learning parent information sessions. The first one will be September 9th at Columbia Middle School at 6:30. The second one, September 14th at Dunwoody Elementary School at 6:30. And a Saturday morning, September 18th at the LIC at 9:30. During this time, you'll have an opportunity to hear more in detail about the direction that we're going in teaching and learning in the district and become more acquainted with the processes that we are working with our schools to implement. And I should share initially that one of our goals this year is to get away from the program-driven models and to really focus on processes. We want all students that may be below grade level, students that may be on grade level, and students that are currently above grade level. We want all students to have their instructional needs met in every classroom. With that being stated, we have shared with all of our principals and teachers some instructional frameworks. One in particular that we want parents to be very familiar with is the 7-step instructional process. The 7-step instructional process basically allows our teachers to first diagnose the needs of students. Understand your students. Know what they know. What do they not know? Understand what type of learning styles they have. Once they diagnose the needs of students, then we expect them to at least use that information to monitor their progress. Monitor if all of the students are meeting those standards or if they're not meeting those standards. And then, of course, once they diagnose the needs of students, they're maintaining profiles, if you will, of the students' learning styles and what they're mastering. We expect them to plan accordingly. We expect lessons to be very engaging. We expect lessons to reflect activities that appeal to all learners, those who are below grade level, those who are on grade level, and of course those who are above grade level. I can remember very vividly when I was in the ninth grade sitting in an algebra class and the teacher was teaching us how to solve one-step equations. And I was an avid learner of mathematics. And to sit in that class and be bored out of my brain while she spent the entire class on one two-step equation, I remember how frustrating that was. There were students in the class who were at that time on one-step equations. But then there were students who were well beyond one and two-step equations. And all of our needs should have been met in that classroom. Therefore, our approach is on processes. So we expect, and we're working with our teachers, to plan very engaging lessons that engage all the learners in the classroom. As they plan, we expect them to go into those classrooms and teach. Teach, teach, teach. We expect students to be engaged in that process. We expect to see foundations, several foundations, collaboration. We expect to see students engaging one another, students engaging teachers. We expect to see students doing activities that really help them develop their higher-order thinking skills. And to this end, we have established a very consistent professional learning expectation so teachers over time can utilize higher levels or engage our students at higher levels using very specific approaches to teaching and learning. So we have 7 steps. We diagnose the needs of students. We maintain the profiles. We plan very engaging lessons. We teach, but as we teach, we expect teachers to formatively assess students hand in hand, which means as you teach a concept, you've got to figure out before you go to the next concept, did everybody get it? If everybody got it, great. For those who did not get it, what are you going to do to assure that their needs are met without necessarily holding back the others who have mastered the concept? And to this end, we've established what we call a 70-70 expectation. This year it's 70-70. We thought once we looked at the data, we better not start too high. But this year it's 70-70. Next year it may be 75-75. But the 70-70 expectation is this. As you teach a concept and you assess students, whether it's formatively or summatively, on some type of benchmark, we expect 70% of the students, minimum, 70% of the students to earn 70% or higher on the assessment. Any student that does not meet that expectation should be provided intervention immediately until they get the student up to that 70% level. We have many students that, across the board, need very, very detailed and individualized attention. Therefore, we have communicated this expectation so all of us will serve notice that it's unacceptable for students not to master the standards or the concept, and we move on without meeting their needs. So we're teaching, we are formatively assessing, and then we're reteaching when necessary. That's the sixth step. We expect reteaching of concepts and strategies, ideas, when it's necessary. And of course, when that's done with fidelity and when it's done appropriately, we expect summative assessments. That's what we would identify as our benchmarks. We expect to see students do well on our summative assessments and validate that the teaching process has been implemented with fidelity. The CRCT is considered a summative assessment, the Georgia High Grad Test. So we're in a conversation in our district. And you heard things about lesson planning, profiles, and things of that nature. But what we're trying to do is create an environment where we're really looking at our learners, where every teacher is in that classroom looking at the needs and the characteristics of those learners and making sure that we have instructional activities and strategies that will help them master the standards that we've identified that they need to master.
Dr. Beasley, if you say 70% of the students should attain 70%, isn't that 1 point above a D?
It is. That's not what we're striving for. But we have to look at our data. That's this is the challenge when we develop the 77 expectation. We have so many schools that have so many students that are not on grade level. We have so many students that, and groups of students, that the teachers have got to work diligently to bring them up to par. So this year, notice what I said, this year, we're starting with, let's see if we can get everybody up to at least a 70-70 rule. Let's see if we can make sure that our students come up to grade level gradually. This year, and I'm with you, I really thought about 88 or 85-85, but looking at the data, realizing that all schools were in different places, we tried to come up with an expectation that everyone could live with and that everyone felt comfortable working toward. Realizing, and again, I support your concern, but realizing, looking at the whole picture, we have some schools that, of course, we got to work maybe a little bit more to even come up to that 70% of mastery. Okay? So, again, the process, and that's the key, the process, we want to make sure that we're looking at the needs of learners, that we're accommodating their needs, and that we're gradually taking all of them to a higher level. It's not enough just to bring level one students up to level two. You've got to take level two to level three, and students that are already at level three, you've got to challenge them even more.
Real quick, we're 3 weeks into school, and I love your 70-70 idea. I wish it was higher. My daughter has already gotten 9 failing grades. We have been 2 meetings with teachers already that she, and with the principal, she is not in the right class. They moved her from, over the last 3 years, from a self-contained special ed class to a co-taught class to a high achieving class. And she is not high achieving. My other 2 children are. Also, we got her CRCT scores back last week. And you say that's how you do your assessments. That's great. How did she get more answers right than she answered?
Well, you have a very good question. And what I would encourage you to do is if you would meet with me afterwards, then maybe we can get with one of our directors and see if we can address the needs, your specific needs of your child. But I want to be very clear. The 70-70 expectation has been communicated and will support this implementation. We expect when students are assessed formatively or summatively, if they are not mastering those expectations, then we expect some type of intervention and remediation be given to that student so that we don't have a history of students not meeting the standards. And state of communication.
Dr. Beasley, at the Tyson, we have...
Can I just hang on 1 minute for a housekeeping help? Mrs. Tyson said she's good till about 11, and just for those of you that might have to leave, if you have a question, there's cards in the back, just write the question on the card, drop it in the basket, and somebody will get back with you if you can't stay till that time. Okay, ma'am, thank you.
We have most of the schools in this feeder pattern are not Title I schools, and we have children in classes at the elementary level that are totally maxed out, and at the high school level that are beyond maxed out. You have an awful lot of certified teachers in your central office. Remediation at the secondary level, data has shown, is very expensive and labor intensive. Why not deploy on a more regular basis some of your central office personnel into your schools so our teachers can have the support they need to make your 70-70 come true?
That's a great question. You should know, we do have instructional coaches, math instructional coaches, and PLA instructional coaches, albeit primarily they are in our Title I schools primarily. The instructional coaches are individuals that are teachers that have the task of providing job-embedded staff development for our teachers in the four areas that we've identified this year. They are there to support the teachers to ensure that they're teaching at rigorous levels and to ensure that students' needs are being met instructionally. Now, all schools, again, don't have instructional coaches, and that's one of our challenges. But your question is a very valid question, and ideally, in most models, in very high-performing school districts, instructional coaches are provided at all schools, because that is the best practice in the area of job embedded staff development.
I'm not really sure that instructional coaches are needed. We have very good teachers, especially up in this area. What is needed would be more bodies interacting with students. I mean, just talking to the teacher and telling them they've got to do more than what they're already doing, and our teachers are really good, that doesn't make any sense to me. We've got certified teachers at the central office, and they need to be meeting individually or in small groups with these children.
When you say certified teachers down with the staff that we have at central office, those instructional coaches are at the school level. I think where we're getting confused is that and maybe this is what has been in the past, is that those instructional coaches have been perceived to have been placed at central office. We have moved those coaches to the school level. And there are some talks about them working directly for the principal. Now, if those are the instructional teachers that you're talking about, those sources have been directed to the schoolhouse. After the instructional coaches, you have the content coordinator, which, by the way, we cut by how many?
We have eight.
We only have eight now. We had two in each area. I think we had 16 last year. We cut to eight. We sent those eight back to the schoolhouse. Just like you said, they were able to reapply and go back to the schoolhouse at that position. So where we are now, we have the three directors, elementary, middle, and high, and they have two content coordinators for each of the disciplines, which is a total of eight. The instructional coaches have been placed in the schools. So now I'm at a loss of where the rest of these teachers are that are sitting in the central office.
I think instructional coaches should be working with children. I think it should
be. And they are. That's where we play.
That's not what he said. He said that they were working with teachers.
Yes, he did.
And that's handy. They primarily work. Okay, I'm talking to one and I'm talking about the other. They work with teachers, but the principal has some autonomy in working with the teachers and the coaches to work with the students. Now, a take back, I think, is a legitimate take back, and Dr. B, I'm going to ask you and your team to get together to look at how these coaches are being used in the building and to see if we can close this gap between the perception of that they only work with teachers and they don't touch students. I think that's a legitimate question that can be posed to this group to do that, to look at that. But I would think the intent here and that the focus already is set that when they're in the building working with the teachers and the teachers needing the help with the students, that that would be the first rule of operation.
May I suggest another take back on this exact process? I do appreciate the systematic commonalities of engaging activities. I think that's very important. I think there has to be some common language throughout a school district, and I do feel like that has been missing for a long time. However, my concern is that our teachers are pulled in so many different directions. They cannot teach every day, every child. And I feel like the county office is requiring more paperwork, they're requiring more reports to be filed, and we've taken away their planning time, and we have put more students in their classrooms. The suggestion that I would make is to put a team of teachers on these implementation committees, ask them what is reasonable as a way to implement these commonalities and learning about engaging teaching strategies. Ask some teachers to help with that implementation because they are in it day in and day out. And sometimes we as administrators, I'm a former school administrator, we lose sight of what a teacher's day is like. And I think that's missing right now.
Ms. Tyson, and Dr. Beasley, following up on this, first of all, I want to thank you and compliment you on how you handled this book sale investigation. It was a breath of fresh air to have a superintendent tackle head-on a culture of corruption and self-promotion. So I really, really compliment you on doing the hard things there. I like your 7-step process. I think it needs to be 8 steps. And the first step would be engaging parents in their appropriate role. If you look at the schools that are successful and the students that are successful, and Harvard did a study years ago that said the single most important indicator in student success is the engagement of the parent. And you have too many parents who send that kid out the door to the bus and they think their job is done. And until you demand parental responsibility, the fact that 70-70 is your goal, it's so scary to me. First of all, my name's Joanne Russler, and I have 3 children who graduate from the magnet program at Chamblee High School. I'm a property owner in the Chamblee District. I have a vested taxpayer interest. And more importantly than that, I am committed to every child in the district getting the education my children got. I have one more thing to say, and actually this is a comment as much, if not more, to the board. For those of you who do not have an institutional memory, several of us in this room were very involved in the SPLOST 1, 2, and 3 process. We met with the then head of the construction program back then, Dr. Pritchett. We did our jobs. We did all the process. We came up with our recommendation. As a group, we had come to the conclusion that it was most important to have the best high school buildings because that was where every child was going to ultimately benefit. That was a recommendation we made. We came forward with all of the horrible building problems at Chamblee High School. So the fact that Chamblee is a tear-down build-up is not new news. We were lied to at SPLOST 2, we were lied to at SPLOST 3, sat across from Dr. Crawford Lewis in a private meeting where he begged us to not hold that against them in terms of promoting well, at that point, SPLOS 3. So we were good students, soldiers, and we went out and promoted SPLOS 3. We need to get some sort of guarantee from the system and the school board, you know, the saying, fool us once, shame on you, fool us twice, shame on us, fool us three times, shame on us. Now you're asking us to go out there a fourth time and get people to vote for SPLOS 4. I, in good conscience, cannot do that unless I get meaningful assurance that Chamblee High School will not be cheated and lied to again.
I'll start at the end and work on it. Let me start with the one guarantee you do have. The one, and then the rest is how we get from 11.7 million to the rest of the dollars. The 11.7 that is allotted in SPLOS 3 is required by the referendum, meaning that the referendum was voted on by the citizens for Chamblee to get the 11.7 million, and it cannot be taken away. So let me first say, by law, you must keep those dollars for that school. The rest of the work that has to be done now is that, based on the total needs of the school, how do we get the rest of the dollars to go with it to give the school the total comprehensive renovation that it needs? It is unlawful for the 11.7 to be taken away. So that we know for sure. That is your one guarantee. The challenge now is where and what dollars, and I heard the answer about the 40 million. That's what the board got to decide, and I feel for them, because that's a hard decision when you only have 3 of 9 people sitting in the room, of how you get the rest of the dollars to do what is really needed for a full renovation in that program. So what I can guarantee to you is what's coded in the SPLOS first referendum is your committed 11.7. It does not go away. It cannot go away. It is unlawful for it to go away. Now, on the Correll piece, I want to go back to your very first statement. You said 8 steps. You are absolutely right. All the research will tell you and show you, if you have strong, direct, deliberate parental involvement, the scores are going to be there. And that is key. And I got to tell you, we've got some problems with that in some of our schools. In a lot of our schools, parents are just checked out. Say it may not be in your school or your school or your school, but we've got schools where parents are completely checked out. I can tell you this, and I'll just share this personal story with you. My kids are in the DeKalb School District. At their elementary school, they are cutting me no slack that I'm the interim. Tried a couple of times, and they are cutting me no slack. So what? Here's what we need. And I gotta tell you, I have written to the It is almost a lost cause in some cases with these children, and it is one of our biggest challenge areas in a lot of our schools. And the district can do so much, but a lot of it is going to have to be the parents have got to step up and step to the challenge. Yes, ma'am, Matthew.